All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Rinkwide Vancouver. They have had worse losses on the scoreboard, but in terms of disappointment in the overall performance and the outcome, this one's got to be right up there as the Vancouver Canucks fall 2-1 to the Washington Capitals at Rogers Arena. Going to break it all down on this episode of Rinkwide Vancouver. We're coming to you from the Rinkwide studio in the lower lobby of the Wall Center Hotel. If you're looking for meeting or conference space in downtown Vancouver, consider the Wall Center, from executive retreats to full-size conventions and everything in between. They've got conference and convention space to meet all of your needs, and it all starts with an email, sales@wallcenter.com. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by David Quadrelli of Canucks Army and Canucks Conversation. And Dave, good start for the Vancouver Canucks, but like the other night against Colorado, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And after the opening minute and 11 seconds, the Washington Capitals took over, and give them credit, but this is a Canucks postgame podcast, and there is a lot to break down in the lack of performance from the home team tonight.
Jeff, against Colorado Avalanche, the Vancouver Canucks controlled the game for 40 minutes. Well, 39 minutes. They controlled it for 39 minutes. Tonight, they controlled it for 2 minutes, and then they put it in park, and it was over from that point on, with the Washington Capitals coming back, just like the Colorado Avalanche did. But again, the Canucks held off the Avalanche and were in control of that game for 40 minutes. And again, we don't want to just break down the Avalanche game, but this Capitals game, it was just way too soon that the Canucks just took their foot off the gas. And as I tweeted, put it out the window, the driver's side window. And I'm not sure that analogy totally works, but you get the point.
Well, so much talk about the rest and the homestand and home ice advantage and everything else. And obviously they squandered the 3-0 lead against the Avs the other night. This is a Colorado team that was playing its 3rd and 4 nights, 4 and 6, working its way across Western Canada with a quick pit stop in Seattle the other night. They're supposed to be the tired team. And for all of this talk about rest being an advantage for the Vancouver Canucks, they're not taking advantage of it. And yet, again, come out firing. Look, last Saturday against Winnipeg, they opened the scoring 2 minutes into the hockey game. The other night against Colorado, 24 seconds after the opening faceoff. Here, it took 61 seconds, so they are getting the starts that they want, but it is a 60-minute game, and if we're going to draw some parallels to the Colorado game, and again, those are the Avs. Like, it was understandable to some degree that Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen took over a hockey game. Yes, Alex Ovechkin does score the game winner, and we can talk about Ovi as this episode rolls along, but like the other night, the late goal in the second period, some adversity that seemed to set the Canucks back and send them reeling a little bit. Referees and the linesmen, they botch an icing at 1-0. They do. It was a bad call. Let's just put that out there. But you know what? You're going to get some calls that go against you in the playoffs. They're 14 games away from postseason hockey. And it felt like the Canucks felt sorry for themselves. And in a two-minute span, Tom Wilson ties the game at one. And then Ovechkin with his 19th of the year, 841st of his legendary career. That was it for the scoring. But you can't wilt. And unfortunately for the Canucks, we're seeing this a little bit here of late. And to me, it's a troubling trend.
Jeff, the Avs are the Avs. You pointed out the Avs are the Avs, but the Washington Capitals are the Washington Capitals. The common theme here is the Canucks crumbling at the first sign of adversity. That's the most concerning thing. Like you just said it, this team is a month away from playoff hockey. Playoff hockey, that's where adversity lives. There's so much adversity in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the way this team is dealing with it right now, it does not bode well, and that's the concern, right? Like, in the grand scheme of things, yes, the Canucks are still the top team in the Western Conference. They're still going to get, I don't even want to say a favorable playoff matchup because it might end up being the Vegas Golden Knights, but in the grand scheme of things, they're still that top team. They're still up there, but the fact that this is happening, the fact that this is happening at this time of year, that's the concerning trend to watch for that Canucks fans are now going to be watching for down the stretch run of this season. And look, we've seen this from other teams in the past. Like, again, I know this is, this is a Canucks post-game podcast and we talk mainly about the Canucks, but you look at other teams over the years, teams that know they're going to be in the playoffs and they kind of do jog to the finish line, if that makes sense. They're looking forward to those playoff games, but tonight's game and Wednesday, mostly tonight's game, though, reminded me of that quote we got from Rick Tocchet early on when this team was having success is, who are we to think we're anybody, right? Like, they were having all that success early in the season, and Rick Tocchet was still pumping the brakes. And now you just kind of look at it and you see this team's done so well. They're close to 100 points with a month to go here. And you just look at it and say, oh, is this team starting to read too much about themselves and starting to get a little too confident in themselves and starting to think, yeah, okay, well, playoffs are on the horizon. We've got this now.
Back-to-back losses. They got a single point the other night. They get nothing in this one against Washington. Just the third time all season that they have lost back-to-back games on home ice. So they have been a dominant bunch. They've responded for the most part when they have lost, and it hasn't happened that often. But again, this nine-game homestand was supposed to be where they put the hammer down, and maybe I was guilty of it too, thinking that, okay, Winnipeg and Colorado right off the bat in the nine-game homestand, that's the heavy lifting. It was supposed to get easier from here. Now, that said, the Washington Capitals somehow, some way, despite their scoring struggles, and they struggled to score goals, and they did again. This is the third straight game that they have scored two, but you know what? They beat Seattle 2-1. They beat the Vancouver Canucks 2-1, so they're finding a way. Give Charlie Lindgren some credit, I suppose. Whatever the case, the Vancouver Canucks, maybe they thought it was going to get easier after the Jets and the Avalanche, but the Capitals are fighting tooth and nail. They watched earlier in the day. Detroit won. The Islanders got a single point, and so they knew what was up for them. But now Buffalo's coming in, and the Sabres are sort of in that same boat that, like, every game matters. And, you talk about having to match a team's desperation. That's where I felt like maybe the Canucks, with the early goal, thought, hey, rested and relaxed, and this is going to be easy. It was anything but. And to go to your point about Rick Tocchet's quote about who are they to think they're anybody. Dave, I've been beating this drum. I feel like I'm a little bit ahead of the curve here, but the market has to catch up. The power play is a disaster. Like, I'm not patting myself on the back because people have talked about all the different formations, the different looks. The common theme is they just can't figure this thing out. Again, I feel like I should shout here on the podcast that there are 14 games to go before the playoffs. They had a power play at 3-3 the other night. As that game was spiraling away against Colorado, they had a power play at 3-3 and didn't convert. They had a power play at 2-1 in the third period of this hockey game. And yeah, they moved it around and they got three shots on goal. But did they score? No. This is a power play that is at 15% since the All-Star break. Like, I don't care what they did back in October and November. That doesn't interest me. It doesn't matter to me at this point. I'm living in the here and now, and there's too much talent on this hockey club for this power play to be limping along at 15% and getting chances at crunch time in these hockey games, high leverage moments where a power play goal would absolutely make the difference. And these guys have scored 8 power play goals in 19 games now since the All-Star break.
Jeff, the best power play chance of the night for the Canucks was the Elias Pettersson slap shot and the one-timer. And even that didn't seem all that dangerous, and they just weren't generating the looks. And, you know, we're talking about the power play, but I even looked to with the empty net at the end of the game. They weren't generating looks. They weren't getting enough traffic in front. It's just, like you said, they're too talented for this to be the case and for this to be what we're looking at here. And, like, in the playoffs, again, we have to look at this team through the lens of the playoffs. This power play is not good enough for the playoffs. They're not good enough for the playoffs. Nope. The way they're playing right now, every inch matters in the playoffs. Every inch matters in the playoffs. And when you get those power play chances, we know they're going to get less in the playoffs. We know that's going to happen. When you get those chances, you need to convert, especially if you've got an opponent that can convert. And in the playoffs, you're going to run into opponents that can convert on the power play. And that's going to lead to some very frustrating series and some very frustrating games for the Vancouver Canucks if this power play continues to limp along like this.
And I throw this out there because this is just as things stand now with basically a month to go before the postseason begins. But the best penalty-killing team in the National Hockey League? The Los Angeles Kings, a very possible first-round playoff opponent for the Vancouver Canucks. Now, again, if they can win the division, they'll likely avoid the Kings. But if things happen, if the bottom falls out for the Canucks or the bottom falls out for the Kings, this is still a possible first-round playoff matchup. You could run headlong into the best penalty-killing team in the National Hockey League. If you've got even if you have a dynamite power play, that's an issue because playoffs are all about matchups. But if you have a struggling power play, you are playing right into the hands of your opponent if they're the best penalty killers in the National Hockey League. So Rick Tocchet can talk about it. He can tweak it. He can put different component parts out there, and we saw them make some adjustments. I mean, they only had the one power play, and I do think that that was sort of indicative of the fact that, like, in that second period, I mean, they did nothing, barely touched the puck, but did nothing to force the issue to draw many penalties. So they finally get one in the third period, and we see Pia Suter out there taking the spot of Connor Garland. And I'm fine with that because as hard as Connor Garland works, he really hasn't added a whole lot to the first unit. And when I talked to him on Friday after practice out at UBC, didn't want to get too deep into his role and responsibility on power play one, said he didn't want to give teams a free pre-scout. But, you know, outside of some entries and puck retrieval, he's not a threat to shoot the puck. We know that. And he's a right shot where Suter's a lefty. And, you know, when this team has been humming along in the last couple of years with Bo Horvat in the bumper, a left shot there. So maybe I'd take Suter over Garland, but maybe I'd prefer Hoglander over Suter or Pod Colson. If you're just looking for somebody in the bumper to hammer pucks, maybe slide JT. I've never understood why they don't slide JT Miller into the middle and let him be the bumper guy and put Elias Pettersson on the left side. And, you know, again, it feels like Pettersson, who, yes, he's struggling and it is becoming the elephant in the room. And I get that. Although Elias Pettersson had 9 shot attempts, which surprises me when I look at the final stat sheet, and again, some of them on the power play and some late in the hockey game, but numbers don't lie, Dave, at least that's what they tell me. But Elias Pettersson, the final statistics on him, you know, plays almost 21 minutes in the hockey game, 3 shots on goal, 6 that didn't make it to the target, but did any of them get in the net? No, they didn't. So 9 attempts for Elias Pettersson, 8 attempts for JT Miller. And I thought it was a weird night for JT Miller in as much as maybe he was trying to do too much. But that line, at the very least, late in the second period with about 3 minutes to go, had one of those shifts that kind of felt like it was going to turn the momentum for the Canucks. I mean, they were buzzing. They had the Capitals pinned. And there was no follow-up, and ultimately there was no bottom line to that shift. So as much as you liked the shift in isolation, it didn't amount to much. But it kind of felt like JT was forcing things. And when I look at his shot line, like 2 shots on goal and 5 that, you know, 1 was blocked, but 4 missed the target, including 2 that were probably 5 feet over the net. And I don't think a JT Miller was sort of shooting wildly that way, but he just didn't feel like he was on the top of his game. But maybe you give him a pass for the way that he's played since the All-Star break. But, you know, the longer this goes, and I get it, like I feel the heat in the market. I sense it around Elias Pettersson. Like, at some point, there does have to be a bottom line. And what's he got, 7 points in his last 13 games? Like, not even basically a half a point a game guy. They keep wheeling through. I mean, pulling levers and pushing buttons and giving them all kinds of different line mates. And, you know, Sam Lafferty and Vasily Podkolzin at one point. And then we saw briefly Garland and Lindholm out there with Pettersson. So, another game that you basically just flush. And there just isn't enough there from the guy that wears number 40 for the Vancouver Canucks.
you're wanting more, right? Like you're just wanting more. You're left wanting more. And you said it, you need a bottom line, right? Like nobody's expecting Elias Pettersson to come out and be Sidney Crosby every night. Nobody's expecting him to be, you know, maybe some people are, but you shouldn't be expecting Elias Pettersson to be Sidney Crosby and take over the game every single night. Like you're not going to get that. But what does Elias Pettersson look like on the nights where he's not on, where he's not producing a ton of points, where he's not taking over the game and being that game breaker that we know he can be? Like, is he holding his own at 5-on-5? Yeah, to some extent. But what else is he doing? Like, what else are you getting from number 40 right now in blue? And that's the question that a lot of Canucks fans are asking. And I struggle with the whole line mates thing because I'm looking at it and saying, yeah, okay, they're trying different variations. But when your variations are, you know, like the Phil DiGiuseppes, the Sam Lafferty's of the world, and the guy who's been in the AHL all season long, I look at it and say, okay, like you've got to hope that something else is going to get Elias Pettersson going. I will say that I would have liked to see the Lotto line together for a little bit longer. We saw them briefly with just over 5 minutes left in the third. But at that point, I'm thinking to myself that it's just too little, too late. And I think the result would kind of indicate that that was the case. But I would have liked to see that stick around for a little bit longer. And honestly, you have to think at this point, it was a similar set of circumstances, Jeff, where the Canucks went to the Lotto line ahead of that road trip, and that Lotto line dominated that Eastern swing, that Eastern road trip that they had where they dominated all the New York teams. The Lotto line was clicking at that point, and it was a similar set of circumstances when Rick Tocchet eventually went to that line. If I had one wish for the rest of this homestand or for at least the next game, get the Lotto line back together. Give them a good run. You've got Elias Lindholm. Give them a shot together. See what you have there.
Yeah, and yet the coach gave a pretty full-throated rebuttal when he was asked about had he thought this was after the Colorado game. And the question was sort of as the tide is turning there, you know, do you think about loading up and trying? He always talks about meeting pressure with pressure. And he kind of shot back and barked a little bit about it's not the answer. It's not the secret sauce. He thinks that the strength is down the middle when they go with the four centers that they've got. But I'm sort of with you that situationally, more than a shift here and a shift there. And if nothing else, it is giving Elias Pettersson, you know, elite level players to play with. And we saw in January when they rolled through New York and New Jersey and Pittsburgh that line had the capacity to take over hockey games and dominate. And that just hasn't been the case. Petey had a 3-point night at home against Detroit, I believe it was. Feels like a while ago now. And outside of a 2-point night not that long ago, you know, it's been a point here, a point there. Tonight, obviously, no points for Elias Pettersson. So he's got 4 points in his last 7 games and 7 points in his last 13. This is a guy, if you go back to the night in Pittsburgh, after they had beaten the Devils, they'd beaten the Rangers and the Islanders, they go into Pittsburgh. Petey is lights out. The Lotto line's on fire there. He scores in overtime. And he left Pittsburgh that night on a 111-point pace. His production has dropped considerably since then, in the 6 weeks or so since then. And no points in this hockey game. So Elias Pettersson now 79 points in 68 games. He's basically on pace for around 95 points now. So for all this talk of back-to-back 100-point seasons, with 14 to go, he's really going to have to get on his horse here. Can he do it? Sure, a couple of multi-point games, power play fires up and comes through. Maybe there's some bottom feeders that he can feast on. I'm not ruling it out, but for much of this season, we all kind of glibly said back-to-back 100-point seasons, and 95 is an incredible total. But just be careful if you're still using that, you know, consecutive 100-point seasons, and I think people that have been writing that he'd be the first Swede to ever produce 200-point seasons back-to-back, you know, it may not happen, and right now it's feeling like it probably won't, and they just need him to dig in. Like, I want to leave the building, even if he doesn't have points, I want there to be a handful of shifts where he looks dominant, he looks possessed, like nobody can get the puck off him. And that's sort of the biggest issue right now, is that he's fighting the puck on a nightly basis. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. You know, it's hard to believe that a guy that had 102 points last year would have confidence issues, but I guess, like, we're all human. But he's got to figure it out. 14 games to go. Like, this team will go as far as its stars can take it in the playoffs, and he is one of them, and they're going to be counting on him, and especially if JT takes on heavy matchups like he did against MacKinnon the other night. That's where the Canucks want to believe that they have an edge, but do they have an edge if Elias Pettersson is struggling? And Another night for Elias Lindholm. Lindholm had that chance in the third period, and give Hendricks Lapierre some credit, got a cross and got a stick on it where it looked like Lindholm might have had an opportunity. But what about that chance in the first period, Dave, when Charlie Lindgren comes way out of the net, puck is on Lindholm's stick. Yeah, he's got Podkolzin in the slot, and there were a couple of bodies, and I know things happen quickly, but that looked like a guy that just wasn't confident. And I'm not even, I guess he's trying to get the puck to Podkolzin, but he essentially slides it back to the goaltender who's able to freeze it. But the numbers are what the numbers are. Elias Lindholm has 2 assists. No goals, 2 assists in his last 13 hockey games.
Just not good enough. It's just not good enough. And Jeff, it's interesting because we were talking about the lotto line. Is that part of the reason that Rick Tocchet doesn't feel confident? Yeah, you love your four centers. Another guy I think about is Dakota Joshua. Like that third line was clicking during that time when the lotto line was reunited. Is that does the third line look the same, if not better, if Elias Lindholm's there? Like, we're all waiting on Dakota Joshua to come back, and you know, you can kind of trace along with when Dakota Joshua went down, with when this team started to really struggle. But what do they have in Elias Lindholm at this point, right? Like, you know, you get your move done early ahead of the trade deadline, so he has a chance to get acclimated, get warmed up to the team. I just wonder how much more the Canucks can wait. And I know that sounds very dramatic and very reactive, but you just said it. Like, you just said it. The numbers that he's putting up right now, just not good enough. Just not good enough for what the Canucks are going to want from him and what they thought they were getting in him when they made the trade for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's both short-term and long-term. And obviously, if he continues to struggle, I don't think that there's much of a question long-term. But, you know, he was brought in to produce at the playoffs. And so it hasn't looked great since the trade. Tried to give him a pass for all the travel and the, you know, compressed schedule. And now they're at home and different line mates and all that kind of stuff. And sure, let's see what happens when Dakota Joshua gets back, whenever that is. But this is a veteran guy. This is a guy that has produced more in the National Hockey League. And you hope that he will again. But man, again, that play in the first period, just like that kind of summed him up right now, I think. Like, he had the chance the other night when Georgiev came way out of the net and you thought that would have made it 4-0, and maybe things would have been different if he had scored there. He didn't, but to have this opportunity and just not take a shot and, you know, take your best shot and see what happens, but instead does absolutely nothing with it. So yeah, some real frustration, and it's pretty tough. If you're, I don't care who you are as a team, if you have one line going and it does feel like it's the JT Miller line on a pretty regular basis right now. And after that, the chips are falling and there isn't a whole lot for the Vancouver Canucks. I want to go to that second period because we'll zero in on the goals in a sec, but just overall, like, you know, the Canucks get out of the first period up 1-0. They weren't great in the first period. The shots were tied 6-6, but they're at home. The Caps are supposed to be this tired team. And, you know, I think there were some warning signs, and who knows what's said in the intermission after 20 minutes of play. Would really like to know what was said after 40 minutes, but whatever the case, the shots were 7-2 by the time that the Capitals tied the game. They scored 2 goals, 6:01 and 7:54. So in a 2-minute span, they turn it from a 1-0 deficit to a 2-1 lead, and that turned out to be all the scoring in the hockey game, but it was just the territorial play and the fact that the Canucks couldn't touch the puck and wouldn't touch the puck and didn't seem to want to battle an awful lot. There wasn't any urgency there as the period goes along. The shots were 12-2 at one point. I did mention the one shift from the Miller line with about 3 minutes to go, but like, what did you make just overall? And then we can get to the goals themselves and the breakdowns that allowed the Capitals to score relatively easily. But like, how disappointing was that second period against the backdrop of letting a lead get away the other night against the Colorado Avalanche?
Jeff, the way I broke it down in instant reaction was that both teams were boring and both teams were asleep for the first period. In the second period, the Washington Capitals woke up and the Canucks did not. The Canucks had not woken up at that point. And then we saw on the broadcast that shot of Spencer Carberry yelling at his bench. And I'm sure Rick Tocchet had a similar message for his bench, but both teams were just asleep for the first period. And then in the second period, the Capitals come out storming back. And look, the Capitals are fighting for their season. What are the Canucks fighting for right now? And it's a legitimate question, right? Because They're in the playoffs. They know they're going to make the playoffs at this point, Jeff. They know they're going to finish at a pretty high seed as well because of all the work they did early in the season. But this team cannot afford to get cocky. And that's what I made of the second period, is the Capitals played like a team fighting for their season, and the Canucks played like a team that were fighting for absolutely nothing. That's the simplest way to break it down. That's how I viewed the second period.
All right, well, let's get to the two goals quickly then. Tom Wilson is 16th of the year. I mean, it tracks back to the icing. And I said right off the top, the officials made a mistake there. I don't know why they can't huddle as a group, admit their mistake, and face off at center ice, but Phil DiGiuseppe was going to be the first guy to the puck. Like, it was a foot race with Alexiev, and PDG was going to get there. And for whatever reason, the whistle sounded, icing, they come back down. But that's where we come back to this idea of adversity. Like, you're going to get some bad bounces. So win a faceoff, and Teddy Bluger can't win the draw. Capitals able to work the puck around, and finally at the side of the net, there is Tom Wilson to tap it in. So Teddy Bluger's been pretty responsible. You know, I don't like to finger point necessarily, but there are moments, and especially on a night when, like, the Canucks were dominant in the faceoff circle. They won 65% of the draws. In fact, the number was much higher than that through 40 minutes of play. You know, there are situational faceoffs that you just have to win, and that sort of speaks to the adversity there, and it kind of spiraled for the Canucks. And so, you know, again, at 1-1, not the end of the world, but you need some sort of pushback shift after the 1-1 goal, and you get your top line out there. You're not your top line, but your top players. You got Hughes and Hronek on the second goal, and Filip Hronek just, you know, backhand, weak backhand flip that can't clear the zone. And again, how many times have we heard that after losses where Rick Tocchet has lamented this team's inability just to make the easy clear? It's not all on Hronek, but that was a simple part of that play. And eventually there's a guy that knows how to put a puck in the net, done it 841 times now in the National Hockey League. And 19th of the season, 16 goals against the Vancouver Canucks. Two of them this year scored in each of the games, did Alexander Ovechkin. But that second one felt like it was a preventable goal and ultimately winds up in the back of the net.
I don't even know where to start. Like, you pick a guy. Pick a guy, go back and rewatch the goal, pick a guy, and he's not in the right spot. And that includes Casey DeSmith. Like, that included Casey DeSmith on that goal, who comes way out of his crease and is challenging God knows who, and then there's the backdoor tap in for Alex Ovechkin. And you go back and watch that goal, and after you're done watching the Canucks defenders, and after you're done watching Casey DeSmith and how they're all out of position, just Alex Ovechkin didn't think he was a part of that play anymore. He was just standing there because he knows that the puck sometimes might come there. But I don't want to say he was gasping for breath or anything like that, like he was when he was chasing down that goal with the empty net. But he's just standing there. Like, he's standing there, looks kind of like he's just hanging out. And of course, when he's hanging out, sometimes he's going to score goals. And that's exactly what happened. But that goal was just a breakdown for the ages, like all over the ice. It was just everybody was in the wrong spot.
Yeah, I mean, again, they work on this kind of stuff at practice. Like, it should be second nature when you're playing your 68th game of the season, as the Vancouver Canucks were in this hockey game. But breakdowns happen. It is so often a game of mistakes. And you know, again, the Capitals don't score often, but they scored enough, and they win it by a score of 2-1. The Canucks now 42-18-8. They stay on 92 points after getting the single the other night against the Colorado Avalanche. They'll try to add to their total against the Buffalo Sabres on Tuesday. They got Montreal coming in on Thursday, and next Saturday, the Calgary Flames. So those are the middle three games of this homestand that has produced a convincing win over Winnipeg, a disappointing loss the other night, but one that at least got to overtime and gained them a single point. And then this one against the Capitals. If there's any silver lining, I suppose, it is that the Edmonton Oilers only get a single point when they had a late 2-1 lead. Colorado tied, and then at the death, quite literally the final second of overtime, the Avs pull out a 3-2 victory in Edmonton in OT. So Colorado with the comeback win against the Canucks here and another one against the Edmonton Oilers. So the Oilers get a single point, but that's all they get. They are now 8 points behind the Vancouver Canucks with three games in hand. It's Jeff and Dave with you as we continue to break down a dispiriting loss for the Vancouver Canucks, 2-1 to the Washington Capitals. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. on the Vancouver Canucks fall to the Washington Capitals. Brock Besser with the only goal for the Canucks, 36th of the season as he closes in on 40, and with 14 games to go, should get there, provided he can stay healthy. A minute and 11 seconds in, another great start for the Vancouver Canucks, but like the other night against Colorado, not how you start, it is how you finish. All right, you've heard from me and Dave and our thoughts on this one. Want to hear from Rick Tocchet, because obviously coach won't like the result, but more than that, coaches are always about the process, right? You hear that all the time. And this is a guy with his wall work and staples and non-negotiables and everything else. This is Rick Tocchet and his assessment of the loss to the Capitals.
Yeah, low event game. Not much offense. A lot of missed shots. Not much interior play. It was just one of the, there's about 8, 9 minutes in the second. We were, obviously chasing the puck, trying to make a push, but we still, we're not attacking the interior, and we missed so many chances, or shots, a lot of shots, missed a lot of shots.
Yeah, he mentions the missed shots. We talked about that a fair bit, the interior play. The Capitals, give them credit, forced the Canucks to the outside. They weren't able to penetrate, and that is where most of the goals are scored, and chasing the game. When you get down against a desperate Washington team that's trying to lock down a victory, I mean, the 2 points, massive to the Capitals, and they get them. The Canucks don't, obviously. So Rick Tocchet, not happy about that. And interesting clip here as well, because he was asked about the fact that really for much of that second period, there's not much going on. So how does he, as a head coach, go about manufacturing urgency and intensity in this hockey club?
Well, if I got to manufacture it right now, this time, we're in trouble. Like, I mean, we've had some battle drills to manufacture practice, so you got to do it for the game. And we got to get inside. We were just way too much on the outside. Way too much on the outside today.
So the head coach, unhappy, understandably so. There are still things, obviously, that he's got to work on. It's time ticking towards the playoffs. 14 games remaining for the Vancouver Canucks. Now, Dave, we break this all down. We look at the players. We spent the first segment sort of diagnosing this hockey game and all the talking points. But I do wonder at some point, and I don't think the Vancouver Canucks lost this game because Rick Tocchet sat on his timeout. But anybody that watched Rick Tocchet as a player knows how fire he was as a competitor. The game has changed a little bit, but I do think, like, in a game where nothing is going in that second period, like, could he, I mean, I'm asking you, but like, my thought was, like, why not call a timeout at 2-1 right after the Capitals have scored that second one? Like, forget holding on to your timeout to drop a diagram late in the game. Like, for a night, even if you don't want to run up and down the bench and go full torts on them, like, just by the very nature of calling a timeout, you're letting them know in front of the fans your displeasure with the way things are going. And the coach has so few sort of mechanisms available to him in game, right? Like, he does the blender and he tries different things. You can bench guys, I suppose, if you have players that you really don't think are pulling their weight. But I don't know. To me, this just kind of felt like a night where maybe he ought to have called a timeout and just tried to impart to his guys that what he was seeing wasn't nearly good enough.
Jeff, there's been a few instances this season where I've thought exactly what you're saying right now. And look, Rick Tocchet, doesn't get a lot of criticism, and rightfully so in this market. He's been a great coach for this team. But I was wondering that again tonight, and I was wondering it a bit as well against the Colorado Avalanche. And I know it was a little bit different, but just when MacKinnon scored that power play goal, you just thought that maybe your team could use a reset. They elect not to do that. And of course, Ross Colton scores shortly thereafter. Look, it's not rapid succession like the Ovechkin goal. There wasn't two goals there. So a little bit apples to oranges there. But this is something that I kind of have clocked in my mind, is just that Rick Tocchet does seem a little bit, shy to use the timeout, whereas it feels like, at least, and maybe I'm having the Mandela effect a little bit here, but it feels like his buddy Travis Green was super trigger happy with the timeouts, right? Like it feels like, when I think back to the Travis Green era, that the Canucks did like to call their timeout and they weren't afraid to use it. And like you said, use it as that reset, use it as that way in front of the fans, the home fans, to say, you're not playing up to our standards, catch your breath, and let's get back to what we know how to do. I've thought that a few times this season with Rick Tocchet, and tonight was one of those nights.
Right, and whether he blisters them in front of the home fans or just chooses to try to settle things down and use it, as you said, a reset. Like, I do think that there is a time and a place, and that one felt like it. And for whatever reason, he elected not to. The Canucks had what I would consider their top six defensemen back in uniform. Some may argue with Tyler Myers getting back in for the first time after missing five, but just the seventh time this season that they've been able to trot out those six defensemen. Of course, Zadorov was acquired late November, and Carson Soucy was out until the new year, and so there's only been six previous occasions than this one, and they give up two goals. Now, we talked about some breakdowns earlier, but for the most part, this wasn't about defending a whole lot better on the goals, yes, but they needed offense, especially once they were down 2-1. You're not going to win at that point, so it was more about what didn't happen at the other end of the ice. And let's just point out the fact that since that 3-0 blown lead against Colorado, they've been outscored 6-1. They've given up six of the last seven goals, so that's not exactly great math for the Vancouver Canucks either. Simpler math, 1, 2, 3, I can count to three. Let's get to the rink-wide Vancouver 3-star selection here on the post-game pod. And the 3 stars are selected in the building by Hockey Night in Canada. Charlie Lindgren wasn't all that busy, but the Canucks pushed in the third period, outshot the Capitals 12-4. They had the power play, they got the goalie out, and had a couple of looks as well. So Charlie Lindgren was the first star, Quinn Hughes setting a record. We'll talk more about that as we move along here. Quinn Hughes with the assist on the Brock Besser goal. He gets the second star. And Ovi, the ageless wonder, 38 years of age, and he gets what turns out to be the game-winning goal, his 19th of the season. And you know what? On a night when there really weren't a lot of stars, I have no issues. I think I'll stick with those and mirror the ones that are selected by the broadcasters in the building, Lindgren, Hughes, and Ovi, the 3 stars of this hockey game. What do you think?
Well, I actually think one under talked about so far on this podcast, at least, aspect of this game is Charlie Lindgren. Like, yeah. I thought Charlie Lindgren was really good in this game, and clearly so did the broadcasters who picked Charlie Lindgren as the game's first star. I got no problem with that.
He wasn't spectacular. He didn't have to be spectacular. Like, can you remember like saves that you were like, my goodness, how did he make that stop? I don't think there were a lot of those in this hockey game. He's taken the job from Darcy Kemper. This is his 7th start in the last 8 games for the Washington Capitals, and I don't know if it's the left-hander thing. Whatever the case, he's doing his job and has earned the net and is keeping the net there. So, yeah, I mean, I think he was the first star of this hockey game, but this wasn't a night where he absolutely robbed the Canucks time and time again. I just thought this was a guy that was doing his job and did it particularly well on the night.
Yeah, but no, by no means did he steal the game, but he did make that save off Patterson on the power play, right? Mm-hmm. And he also was tracking pucks really well through traffic. I thought that was the part that stood out for his game tonight for me was, you know, even when the Canucks started to throw the kitchen sink at the Caps in the third period there were a few chances where I thought to myself, wow, okay, Charlie Lindgren made that save, and again, it's not a highway robbery or anything like that, but it was a few moments that I just kind of clocked and was like, oh, okay, that was a really nice save by Charlie Lindgren. That was a really nice piece of work for him to track that puck through the traffic, track it through the skates. Obviously, there was a few deflections on him that he was able to turn aside, and he was this game's first star, which is great news for Charlie Lindgren, not great news for everybody else on the ice.
Yeah, Canucks don't want to make the other team's goalie the first star. Many more nights on this homestand as they get a little bit of a breather again. Buffalo comes in, then Montreal and Calgary. Lots still ahead here. We'll get to our stat that stands out. We'll get a little listener feedback as well. Your thoughts on what you saw in a 2-1 loss to the Washington Capitals. And we will wrap things up with a thought or two on what's to come the rest of the way here on the homestand. The Canucks drop a 2-1 decision to the Caps on Saturday night. Jeff and Dave with you here. It's Rinkwide Vancouver. On the Washington Capitals beat the Vancouver Canucks, only visit of the season for the Caps. So Ovi comes through, scores the game winner, and as I said earlier, 16 goals against the Vancouver Canucks over the course of his career. So 16 of his 841 have come at the expense of the Canucks. Broke into the league back in 2006, so coming up on 20 years in the National Hockey League and creeping closer with every goal to Wayne Gretzky's NHL record of 894. Speaking of records, a record-setting night for Quinn Hughes. I know that it wasn't what he's looking for. He wants wins for his hockey club, and he would have liked to have added to his totals, but he does get the assist, the primary assist on Brock Besser's 36 that opened the scoring a minute and 11 seconds in, and for Quinn Hughes, that is 77 points. And regular listeners know, we do a stat that stands out on the episode after each and every Canucks game. So that's the stat that stands out to me. 77 points and counting with 14 games remaining. You know, we talked about Petey, he's going to have trouble getting to 100 points. At one point, there was a thought that maybe Quinn Hughes could have a 100-point season. He won't get to 100, but I think with 14 games to go, and again, if this power play can ever show any signs of life, 90 points is still well within his reach. And I mean, I feel like we talk about him on every post game because he generally has a hand in the outcomes almost every night. Busy yet again, played 10 minutes and 50 seconds of the third period, so they leaned on him a lot, barely came off the ice. His final shift of the night was 2 minutes and 49 seconds, so they just kept him out there, including with the extra attacker, unfortunately for him, and the Canucks unable to get the goal that they needed. But for Quinn Hughes, breaking his own record that he set last year, and of course, last year broke the record he had set the year before, and something tells me as we move into the fourth season of Rinkwide a year from now, we may be talking about him shattering his own record yet again. He's that good, and that's just kind of the trajectory that he is on. But 77 points and counting, still continues to lead the National Hockey League defenders in scoring this season.
Oh, what can you say about Quinn Hughes? I'm hoping I have a vote on the Norris again. I have the past two seasons. He's my first place Norris. Norris winner. I think he's going to win the Norris Trophy, and he should. He should, Jeff. Like, this guy's a legitimate case for to pick up Hart votes. I shouldn't say he's a legitimate case for the Hart Trophy. He's a legitimate case to pick up some votes, maybe in that fourth, fifth spot on people's ballots. I don't know what else you could say about him. I had a really good chuckle to myself when I saw that stat today. That he is broken, as you said. He broke last year's record, and last year's record broke the year before that. And who knows what next year will have in store for Quinn Hughes and the Vancouver Canucks record books.
We like to get a little bit of listener feedback, and we always ask after each and every game, sort of what's the major takeaway from the Canucks' performance, win or lose, and this is back-to-back losses now, obviously. John says everything seems off again. Miller's line seems to be carrying the team. I think we're in desperate need of that third line with Joshua right now, and every time you see Rick Tocchet go to the blender, Dave, it just reinforces that, you know, the team either elected to stand pat at the deadline or just didn't have the cap space to make the moves necessary, even with Phil Kessel. But you see the way that they are aligned out there, and we talk about Elias Pettersson and, you know, needing better, more legitimate scoring wingers. You know, they're a winger short. They are. They're a top six forward short. Getting Dakota Joshua back is going to help because it'll move other pieces around the lineup. It should add some scoring support to the third line into the bottom six. But yeah, I mean, JT Miller's line, Mikheyev scored the other night. Besser gets the only goal. JT's been on fire since the All-Star break and really all season long. But right now, I mean, that line seems to be on an island and they're just not getting the support that that they need.
I was having this conversation earlier in the week because you'll notice this, Jeff. Against Colorado, it was the Trenin and it was Duhame that were impacting the game. And those were two guys that were available, obviously, on the trade market. The Avalanche get them both. You have to have that feeling, especially after two games like this, where you say, man, they are a top six winger short, and that could have been addressed at the deadline. Now, I know Duhame ended up going for third, and obviously we're not going to get into the trade discussion on this show, but they are short, that top six winger. And look, are they hoping that Vasily Podkolzin can kind of turn into that on the fly? It feels like they've been hoping for that all season. It feels like they were hoping for that out of training camp, but as we know, out of training camp, it didn't work. I like Podkolzin's game, but he might not be the answer, and he may not be the guy that they're hoping that he can be. They're hoping for some reinforcements here, and I just don't think they're going to get it the way that everybody's playing right now.
Yeah, and, you know, there was such excitement 3 weeks ago when Archie Baines got his opportunity. He came up, had five games, no bottom line. The hope was that Vasily Podkolzin, a guy that scored 14 goals in a season as a rookie in the NHL and spent all this year marinating in the American Hockey League, that he would come up and have some sort of bottom line. That, you know, he should be a better player than Archie Baines just based on his draft pedigree, but also his NHL experience. And through six games, no bottom line. And so that part of it's disappointing. I mean, there are elements to his game that, yeah, I mean, he doesn't look out of place, but, you know, so often the true tell of what a coach thinks about a guy and the way that he's playing is his deployment. And Vasily Podkolzin had one shift in the final 13 minutes of a 2-1 hockey game. I mean, he shortened the bench and Podkolzin was caught in that. And so, you know, hard to be a difference maker if you're not getting your number called. But on the night, you know, no shots on goal, one shot attempt, three hits. So you want him to be physical, but just 10 minutes and 39 seconds of ice time. So, you know, right now we're talking about the Miller lines going and fairly productive on a nightly basis, but they need contributions from elsewhere. And if Podkolzin is playing and playing in the top nine, then yeah, I mean, maybe I don't expect things from him the same way I expect them from Elias Pettersson and to a lesser degree Elias Lindholm. But if you're playing and you're getting a regular shift in the first couple of periods by, you know, six games, would have been nice if there had been some sort of bottom line for Vasily Podkolzin. Chris says way too many passengers on this team right now. Al says, but Jeff, if they get to play at home and get rest, they're going to play better. That's what everybody said. You're right. That's kind of been the thrust here for the last 10 days or so was, you know, just get through that month of February and then look out because all that home cooking, well, the home cooking has produced a win, a loss, and an overtime loss. So haven't exactly blown the expectations out of the water. Trevor, I'm not sure that I'm ready to go here with you yet, but Trevor says four and out postseason at this rate. Again, I want to see who they draw, but there are troubling signs. Even though they remain in top spot in the division, you know, they are struggling to score goals, without a doubt. The power play is a huge part of that, but we've talked about some of their best players, some of the depth players. I want to see what they look like when Dakota Joshua gets back, but every team has injuries to deal with. Like, if Dakota Joshua means that much to this team, then the idea of re-signing him, I mean, he and his agent are just going to sit back and say, look what happened when our client was out of your lineup. You guys fell to pieces. You got to be able to persevere with one guy. And again, they'll welcome him back and he will help without a doubt. But if really and truly Dakota Joshua is the difference maker, then yeah, maybe this team isn't as good as we think it is and as good as it was certainly earlier in the season. So, you know, again, they haven't had too many bounce back games this season, but this was supposed to be one after letting a 3-0 lead get away and falling 4-3 to Colorado. Shot out of Canada to start. They get the 1-0 lead they were looking for, and then that was it. So they're sort of right back in bounce back mode. I do wonder, for all the talk of rest and days off and Rick Tocchet giving his team, you know, full days away from the rink and then getting them back to practice. You know, ultimately, these guys are creatures of habit. And even, like, as, you know, guys like us that cover this team, you get into a rhythm over the course of a season. Like, I wonder if a game every other night this week is actually, like, they've had their rest now, and now they play Tuesday, Thursday, and next Saturday. I wonder if that in some way can help the Vancouver Canucks just get back in the rhythm of being hockey players again.
I found the whole rest thing so interesting, Jeff, because, look, we know this team's played a lot of hockey. They've played well. Rick Tocchet rewarded his team with 2 days off. 2 days off, back-to-back, first time this season that we've seen 2 days off for this team, aside from the All-Star break, of course. 2 days off for this team. And then they play the game against Colorado, and Rick Tocchet says, no, I think I may have missed the mark on those 2 days of rest. I'm going to practice them. And he was open with us. He said, these are going to be hard practices. They had one at Rogers Arena, and then they have one out at UBC. It feels like you got to find that middle. You got to find that middle ground, right? Where it can't be, okay, here's all these days off. And I understand what Rick Tocchet was trying to do. And, you know, he admitted that maybe I shouldn't have done that. But now you get this kind of rhythm. And like, it's like you said, they're creatures of habit. You have to feel like it's going to help because Jeff, like, they were rested to start the year and they played a lot at the start of the year. And they played well, like they played well doing this kind of rhythm of every two nights they were playing, and they did very well. It obviously started to catch up to them later in the season, but you have to hope that now it's kind of like this little reset for the team going forward.
Yeah, and I don't want to overstate the importance of the Buffalo game, but again, the Edmonton Oilers are eight back now with three games in hand, and of course the Canucks and the Oilers still have one left head-to-head. I do think that for as long as the Canucks have ridden atop the Pacific Division with 14 games to go, it would be crushing. And look, I get preseason expectations. Nobody had them winning the division. But throw that out of the window. Like, things change over the course of the year. The Canucks have done so much to get to the record they've got at 42-18-8 that even as they sit with 92 points, and they're going to get to 100. I mean, they're going to pick up four more wins in their final 14 games. But I do think it would be, I mean, forget optically, I think in that room, there would be a sense of letdown that they couldn't see this thing through. And don't get me started on the way Oilers fans would react if they ultimately reel in the Vancouver Canucks and nip them at the finish line. But it's still a possibility. I'm sure Edmonton still thinks that it's a distinct possibility. Edmonton flushed one, but they did get a single point. The Canucks ultimately get nothing out of this game against the Washington Capitals. They fall by a score of 2-1. So Buffalo in on Tuesday, Montreal here on Thursday, and the Calgary Flames next Saturday night. For David Quadrelli, this is Jeff Patterson. Again, we remind you to check out all of the post-game coverage, the Stanchies, the Statsies. I'll have my Sunday column up on Canucks Army. So lots of post-game and aftermath reaction coming up on Canucks Army if you're looking for content in the days ahead. But for Dave, this is Jeff. As always, we really appreciate you spending a little time with us here on Rinkwide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.